adopting new tech, it just needs to be easy. Going back to human nature, nobody likes to be surprised. It's like you will win fast, but you will lose fast too.
Equal protection under the law is one of the bedrocks of the American legal system. And yet, the truth is that because of ticking time, skyrocketing costs, and traditional processes that feel like a never-ending maze, really quality legal support is often the purview of only the richest businesses and individuals in the U.S. Today's guest, Rich Lee, and the team at New Era ADR are building a world where legal disputes could be resolved faster, cheaper, and with far less stress. In today's episode, we're going to explore how Rich's unconventional journey from bioengineering to law and then to legal tech has equipped him to tackle one of the most complex and risk-averse industries out there. Now, Rich has done it all, helped scale Civis Analytics by over 600%, built and sold a fintech company, and now, with New Era ADR, he's rethinking how we solve legal disputes. In this episode, we're going to uncover the story behind New ADR and how it's reshaping the legal industry, how empathetic leadership drives innovation and trust, Rich's approach to managing investor relationships through tough times, why legal risk is about calculated decisions and not just avoiding mistakes, and how all of this is connected to Rich's mission to make justice more accessible to everyone. If you've ever faced a really daunting challenge in business or in life, I think you'll find Rich's perspective deeply relatable and inspiring. So let's dive into this thought-provoking conversation with Rich Lee right here on Venture Visionaries. You have a pretty interesting background in law and bioengineering. I'm curious how and at what point those two intersected and how they've influenced your later work in legal innovation and social impact.
Being a co-founder of a tech company in the legal space, that alone combines the engineering background and, of course, the legal background. It kind of goes back to interests for me. Always loved to tinker, always loved how things work, which is why the engineering side of things was great, you know, and as an educational background, really interested in the legal side, also the business side of technology, which led me down my career path, which is, if you kind of look at it, relatively unconventional compared to, you know, a lot of lawyers who kind of start out in a law firm, maybe go in-house, kind of had a different career arc, but wouldn't have traded it for anything, frankly. You know, the engineering element led me to want to be a patent lawyer, became a patent lawyer because I thought I was going to see the newest technology, the newest gadgets always like, on a daily basis. Turns out that's not exactly what patent law is, as interesting as it as that is. I wanted to be closer to the tech. So I took a job, you know, doing investment banking involving technology assets. So instead of helping organizations obtain patents, you know, actually brokering a lot of technology transactions involving patent portfolios, involving innovation portfolios, which led me to leading market development in different parts of Asia. Very, very interesting work. My passion was always like wanting to get closer to the actual technology side, but also building. That's another, I think, a main theme of my career was always like, it was always building something, whether it was building a practice, the IP investment bank, whether it was building markets for an IP consultancy or building two different companies. And then now, like from the ground floor, starting my own company with partners to build it from the ground up.
How did you figure out how to speak and converse in each of those worlds?
I've always been pretty comfortable context switching. I think as a baseline was really helpful. In terms of what you pick up from each, I think that's important because then it's marrying all these different elements. From law school, it's really learning how to see around corners, right? Because law school teaches you how to quickly identify everything that can go wrong in any situation. I mean, it's one of the core kind of muscle memories you develop because every single class is around that. Like, what are the potential issues? What's everything wrong with this fact pattern? But from the banking world, it was certainly a lot of, I mean, sales. Also, just learning the financial side of IP and technology portfolios and patents, right? Like when I was a patent lawyer, the business side of the IP wasn't really top of mind. It was simply, hey, let's help clients protect these very valuable inventions. But then what happens to them? How do they play into an organization's overall strategy, both from a product standpoint, but from a financial standpoint? What is that role of both like intellectual property, but also just the legal function in general? So that was really helpful. And then, of course, the startup world was a very natural transition for me. I enjoyed the fast-paced, don't know a lot of structure, don't know where this is going to lead, let's build something type of environment. That's also what it caused me to quickly land in the startup world. Like when I was general counsel of those two different companies over 10 years, I joined each one when they were, you know, very small companies and then grow them before, of course, starting my current one from scratch.
I wonder if you could share a little bit with some stories of your time at these companies. What role legal counsel played in the growth journey?
Legal plays a really important role, but when structured correctly, right? And when approached correctly, because I think fundamentally, no company is going to grow fast unless they take a lot of risks, whether it's a tiny two-person startup all the way to Google, right? Look at what Google's doing with Quantum. You don't get to that without taking a lot of risks and bets. You know, legal's role in any organization, but especially at the early stage, and especially as like CEOs and founders are thinking about potentially adding this, it's understanding that legal's role isn't to get rid of risk or to reduce risk. It's to help the organization still take a lot of risk, but decide which risks to take. There are certain paths where, you know, like my last company, we handled a lot of data and companies trusted us with a lot of data. There's different risks that you can take as it relates to, you know, maybe how you use the data. There's the ultra kind of reckless path of like, let's just do whatever we want. But then there's also, and this is also the tendency of a lot of legal rules, is they end up going down that very conservative path of like, you know what, can't do a single thing, or it's only these very narrow things. But either one is really going to adversely affect enterprise value. The first reckless path could potentially collapse the company. When you're too conservative, while you may not be able to build the products that you want, or the products that you build may not be as powerful or interesting to your end users, you know, as you would want them to be, it was navigating the things around like, well, what can we do? While, of course, always staying on the right side of the law, but going deeper and not just finding the legal solution, but also finding the business, the product, the customer facing, the outbound communications solution, the kind of holistic solution around like, what are the things that we could try, which would benefit the customers, make the product just way more interesting, way more valuable, you know, without getting into like the specific use cases. A lot of it was that. And then helping the organization get the customers on board with like how we were going to do that. It's funny because I like to say when I was at Civis, that was actually AI before what it is today. Right? It was data science, it was analytics, you know, and now today you just kind of layer on the generative element on top of it. But really underneath the generative AI, it's still kind of the guts and, you know, the foundation that we built at Civis, a lot of the stuff that we were doing. And so, you know, it's very applicable today.
With New Era ADR, you're not just founding a new company. I think in some ways you're founding a new category. What was your initial inspiration for it? And how did you identify the unique opportunity in improving access and efficiency of dispute resolution?
The initial motivation and inspiration was something that, you know, my co-founders and I all experienced. It was out of the sheer frustration that we experienced. Two of my co-founders, it was four of us who started the team. Two of my co-founders are like myself. We were former GCs of technology companies. And so managing these legal functions, seeing just over the course of our careers, and we're all pretty experienced lawyers by the time we started New Era, over the course of our careers, just regularly seeing like, why is it that legal disputes automatically mean like when you hear the word lawsuit or anybody hears the word lawsuit or anything remotely legal, immediately we're budgeting potentially 2 years of our time, hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars in spend, you know, and a ton of time and distraction and attention that's taken away for that legal dispute. That kind of assumption that we've all just accepted as normal, that anytime there's a legal dispute with anybody, whether it's person to company, company to company, it doesn't matter. It's automatically, we just accept that it's going to be really, really painful, very time consuming, very expensive. As company leaders in our legal departments, we dealt with that. That basic fact, which is really messed up, drove a lot of decision making. And so our thesis was, wait a minute, most legal disputes that happen in this country and probably around the world, but we're focused on the US market, most legal disputes don't need the long processes of our court system or like legacy arbitration systems, those were the places that you could go, right, to resolve your legal dispute. And they were the only places that you could go. And because they were the only places and they lent themselves to the expense, the time consuming element, and of course, the pain and attention that it's going to take away from you, we all just accepted that that was normal. And so our premise was, you know what, most legal disputes in this country, right? And so if you think about within a company, the typical run the company type disputes or like high volume disputes. So it could be disputes with a vendor, a customer, an employee, consumers, or even in like a marketplace, disputes between a buyer and a seller inside a marketplace. None of this stuff needs that super painful 2+ year process. And so our premise was like, well, that's the bulk of disputes. Let's build something to actually address that. Let's build a place for those disputes to go. Win or lose, you will be done. Most people just want to move on. What happens along the way is you also make this way more accessible to individuals. You know, I describe that same calculus on the company side. That happens all the time with individuals. An employee who's truly wronged, right, by a company, a lot of times that's the calculus that goes through their head. Like, well, if I try and stand up for myself, am I even going to be able to afford it? Do I want to take time to go through years potentially of litigation just to stand up for myself? And a lot of people actually answer no to that, and they don't do it. That in itself is, you know, frankly, very messed up. Think of how many of these cases aren't heard.
I'm really curious if there are unique challenges to starting a tech-based solution in the legal space.
Yes, there always will be. I think in every industry, there's certain challenges. Legal has unique elements in the sense that kind of what I was saying before, law school trains lawyers, right, to identify everything that can go wrong. And so naturally, I think the end customers of ours, which are generally companies, so lawyers who represent these companies, who are in-house lawyers at these companies, you know, and then the law firms who represent them, actually now many of them are recommending New Era to their customers. The big challenge early on was, you know, lawyers are risk averse. When you can quickly assess like all the things that can go wrong, you're going to be a little risk averse to that. You know, it wasn't just because of the tech, but because we're creating this brand new category and a brand new way of resolving legal disputes. And so a lot of it was building trust. It was very helpful that at least the three of us and our fourth co-founder, who was not a lawyer, but she's been in compliance and legal operations her entire career as well. We all come from this as veterans of these industries. And so we can speak very knowledgeably about personal experience. We actually have the background knowledge to overcome a lot of the questions that people may ask about, like, how is this going to work? Will this even work? So it started there, building a product that was really, really easy to understand. And so this is truly now the tech portion of it, borrowing from the product design principles of, you know, the tech industry that we all came from, ensuring that these were very easy to use, easy to understand tools, because adopting new tech, it just needs to be easy. If the implementation or the, you know, just the learning curve of getting up to speed on this new tech platform is too high, and you marry that with like brand new category, that would be a really, really hard proposition to try and gain a foothold in this industry. And so it was trust building, building accessibility. And then of course, then being deliberate about finding who our initial evangelists were, people who were credible. And then, of course, eventually the first companies, the first law firms who were referring us. And just like in human nature is that, like, once you see that there are a lot of organizations and a lot of law firms who you trust or who you know are thoughtful about the decisions they make, and they're using New Era, well, then, you know, the rest of these customers, you know, you overcome those hurdles quicker and quicker with each incremental customer. Fortunately, we're at that stage where we see that. Now it's not so much a question of, well, they're new. Do they know what they're doing? That part they see like, oh, these guys know what they're doing. They've been adopted by all these different organizations. Now it's just a question. And it's really interesting watching them, you know, just think through like, where can I use this in my organization? Right. And every organization is unique in the types of legal disputes or disputes period that they have, where it's probably still taking too much time and they would love to find efficiencies.
Co-founder relationships are notoriously difficult and complicated. How did you think about vetting your co-founders? And are there any things that you as a team have enacted that you think have allowed you to remain such a cohesive, high-performing team?
I think from the vetting standpoint, fortunately, we were all friends. At least one person knew, you know, the next person. And we all trusted each other in terms of, hey, this person would be a very good addition. I think the built-in relationship was really helpful. You know, I know certainly like their organization and startups, right, where co-founders are relatively strangers and they met and try to start that way. Fortunately, we didn't have that dynamic. You know, the depth of the relationship, the understanding of each person's proclivities, I think that takes time. That was a really helpful way to start. As we keep going, as we build, not so much processes and any sort of tangible framework, but for us, I think the built-in trust that we have with each other and the willingness to let go of certain things and trust each other to make the right decisions. I mean, it's kind of inherently a part of how I've run my teams, whether here or in the past, is if you want to grow fast at something, you have to empower your team. Just make judgments, calls, trust them to make good decisions, exercise good judgment, execute, and then more importantly, not belabor any mistakes that were made and, you know, turn those into learning moments. And so I think we have that with each other. And so far, that framework's kind of unspoken, but it works really well.
What does it look like to set healthy boundaries, but productive relationships with investors?
That starts over time. If you wait until the challenging times are upon you to start building, that's going to be hard. This applies broadly. You could almost break that down into a few steps, right? Step one is kind of like being introspective and self-aware, right? About the business, right? And so a big thing is, especially early stage companies, as they're getting their investors, but really this applies to anybody bringing their next set of investors on board, right? Certainly there's that art of fundraising and, you know, showing like what the business could be. But there's also a very important element of being realistic, one, first with yourself, you know, how you see your business growing, you know, the trajectory of the business, recognize and set aside that desire, right, to just say what someone wants to hear, which is, oh, well, we're going to just quintuple every single year. I think it starts there because then you can be open and transparent and frankly set expectations with your investors. Investors are like a lot of people, which is they generally just don't want to be surprised. When you're self-aware, you know, where the trajectory of the business is going to go, you know, how it's going to grow, how it may not grow as fast as the most ideal scenario, saying that to your investors early on. And of course, then discussing over time, right? Whether that trajectory is being met, what's working, what's not, what's a really great, pleasant surprise, you know, what's a not great surprise. You know, now you've built that relationship. The investors also aren't surprised. They have an idea of like how you see the business growing and where you see it going. And so then when bad times come, then you can assess the business in light of the bad times, but also in light of a true understanding of the business versus say the things that you think an investor wants to hear, but then bad times come, you know, and then you have to share the realities of the business that were there from day one. Well, then that's never going to be a great dynamic to then try and, you know, huddle and collaborate.
I'm curious if you have a specific example where transparency with investors helped navigate a crisis or align on key goals.
Not so much a crisis, but, you know, we are creating a brand new market. And so just being realistic with the investors that, hey, yes, here are the empirical figures that show you just how absolutely massive the market we're playing in is. Investors like that. And that's true. We're playing in, you know, the world of legal disputes in the United States, and being the most litigious country in the world, it's a big market, right? But then being very realistic about how we're going to go capture this incrementally, piece by piece, which portions, and talking about the fact that, hey, this is not like a social media app or some, you know, some viral consumer app where you launch and if you get the right hook or you market just the right way and you put in the right engine, you're going to gain this like viral adoption or like a very fast, clear path to like fast user growth. For us, being very realistic with the investors, saying that, hey, this is a new way of thinking of legal disputes. These are lawyers we're dealing with. Lawyers are risk averse. There's going to be a lot of trust building early on. And so you're just going to see a slower growth rate at the outset. But then talking about the upsize and, you know, how, without getting too deep into New Era, for New Era, the way people adopt us, one way they adopt us is by changing their contracts. And so, for instance, any contract you've ever signed, any vendor agreement, any sales agreement, an NDA, an employment agreement or employment handbooks, there's always something in there that says, if we have a legal dispute, we will resolve it in, you know, the courts in Chicago or this, you know, kind of legacy arbitration platform. Just simply by crossing that out and replacing that with new era ADR, that means that any future legal dispute is now going to come to new era. You know, as an organization or anybody who has that in their agreements, you know that now any future disputes are not going to be as painful, which is great. Right. And for us, we're written into these agreements, right? And these are legal obligations. This is relevant because it's explaining to our investors that this is actually a very durable way of growing too. It's going to be written into these agreements. And as more and more organizations put us in their terms and conditions, their employment agreements throughout their organizations. And now we have organizations with like 3 employees all the way to organizations with 100,000 plus employees, right? Using this. This will lead to that durable growth, but you have to be patient with us. You have to understand as investors, our growth is going to be different from some of the other, you know, vertical SaaS companies that you might have invested in. While you may bucket us as vertical SaaS, it's a little bit different, but then showing them like how this is going to be beneficial in the long run beyond to the first 2, 3, 4 years.
Have you always been somebody who's kind of attracted to the deepest or hardest problems, or was there something unique about this that called to you?
Yes and yes.
Tell me more.
I enjoy the bigger problems, the large scale problems. Full disclosure, and this actually dovetails into the second part of the question, but as I was thinking about New Era with my co-founders, also exploring, you know, something around healthcare data analytics and things around how to actually combine healthcare data, a project that I was exploring with, you know, another friend of mine to solve a large scale issue around why, as anybody in the US, we can't just take our healthcare data from disparate sources, combine them. More importantly, why can't our doctors do that and see large scale treatments, treatment plans, and like the outcomes at a large scale across many, many patients? That's a very large scale problem that also butts up against existing healthcare privacy laws. That was very interesting to me. For me, and why I was particularly drawn to New Era was, even though I experienced that too, like just seeing doctors and seeing other people go to their doctors and the doctors not having this body of data that should just be at their fingertips available to them. I experienced the pain of litigation, right? As of 2 different companies over 10 years firsthand. Because of my background, then the biggest thing was the co-founders that I would have, all the things lined up. It kind of pointed me to like, this is definitely the problem that I want to pursue. It's big. It's potentially could fail because you're trying to disrupt and change a very entrenched way of thinking. But fortunately, you know, what we found is that like the pain and the annoyance by everybody about around like how long and painful a legal dispute can be. It's been really exciting that it's a welcome and refreshing alternative. So it turns out a lot of people were looking for the same thing. And so we just chose to go build it.
It's kind of clear in some of your writing, the way you describe this, that you're deeply passionate about solving the access to justice gap. Could you speak a little bit to why this issue is so important for you, how you see New Era contributing to that success, and then what else you're kind of doing in this space?
Let's start with access to justice, that gap, right? And there's a lot of different ways to, you know, define that gap. But for me, it's not just the low-income individuals who qualify for legal aid, right? Because you have to be under a certain income threshold. I think a big portion of that gap is actually all the people in between, call it top 1%, and then everybody else who have legal problems, don't qualify for legal aid, but yet still can't afford a lawyer or afford really, really good legal help, which is like many, many people. But then lawyers are expensive and legal issues are difficult. And even finding the right lawyer is hard. That's kind of what I define as the justice gap. And for me, it was seeing and like coming to the realization, especially in law school, you know, where I started helping my parents with some just like, I mean, little legal issues here and there, but, you know, just thinking like, wow, if they really needed a lawyer, I'm not sure they would have been able to afford lawyers. One instance stands out, but helping, you know, folks that I've just met along the way, like, you know, helping mailroom guys at like one of my law firms or the law firm I was at for 1 year, helping them with some of their legal issues. And this is just a new grad, but still just helping them think through how to navigate these things. But the one that stands out is, it was a door person of mine in one of the buildings I worked with. And he was actually, out of all his siblings, he was the one who was took on the responsibility of helping his elderly mother, you know, with house issues. There was a reverse mortgage that she'd taken out that was becoming problematic, helping him, doing research on the side, and then helping him trying to navigate this, and then helping him find free or low cost legal resources to actually take it the rest of the way. That was one of the ones that really stood out, because he was a really, really, really good guy. You know, my assessment of it was like, yeah, there are elements in the system that were, you know, not being very fair to him or his mother. You know, to see people like that not be able to just go hire a lawyer. That's the thing. A lot of times that's all you need is someone to write a few letters, ask a few questions to really unlock and clear some of these things up. But that's just highly inaccessible. Right. And so for us, this is where we can at least play one small role, which is going back to what I said earlier, right? A lot of people, even if they know that they've been wronged and they have all the evidence in the world that they've been wronged, a lot of times they don't, they can't stand up for themselves, because the prospect of standing up for yourself means that long, expensive, time-consuming, multi-year process, and people can't afford that. That's where New Era, I think, plays a really big role, is as more organizations switch over to us. Even though it helps the organization save money, here's the thing we say to every organization that signs up with us. It's like, you will win fast, but you will lose fast too. If there is a consumer, there's an employee who you've truly wronged, well, now they're going to also get a resolution in 100 days. And if you truly wronged them, most likely that resolution is going to be employee wins. Luckily, there are very few organizations like this that like to bury people in procedures and litigation, kind of what you see out of movies. But to the extent that if you are that organization, guess what? We're not good for you. Because if you've done something wrong, there's no world now where, you know, just throwing the book at the other side is going to help you, you know, eventually outlast them and tire them out and make them drop the case. It's going to be done. The process itself, the platform itself, even the way we build. So from day one, like, my directive to our product and engineering teams is, when you have a persona in mind, build this for the unrepresented individual. And sometimes I'll add unrepresented, low income, not as highly educated individual. Build the product as much as possible that they can understand it, so that if they come without a lawyer, they could still navigate the platform. They can still do the things that are needed to stand up for themselves on the New Era platform, and then get to the hearing, where fortunately in arbitration hearings, right, like, less process involved, less kind of a lot of the formalities of court are not there. And so that helps a lot. So getting that individual to the hearing so that they can basically just have their day in court, so to speak.
What are the trends that you're most excited about right now in legal tech?
The very popular answer, which applies to me too, is, of course, you know, the advent of these large language models and the possibilities that exist within them, both for companies, for making legal work better, and also for access to justice. Starting with that last point, I mean, from an access to justice standpoint, talk about overnight exponentially increasing the amount of access and knowledge and self-help that could be available to individuals through these tools, right? And then a side benefit of that is, you know, for the ones who then get a lawyer to represent them, it also makes the clients themselves, the plaintiffs themselves, or the organizations themselves, you know, slightly more informed, right? Which makes their lawyers more effective. This applies in so many different contexts, which, you know, we could go all night about. For example, just getting smart on a new law that just passed, or getting smart on something that, you know, my kid's dealing with. Whatever it is, we can all really gain a better understanding of something. And frankly, it's not so much that you now know that thing, but a lot of times, if you think about, like, how we searched for knowledge in the past, you know, you're going through all these searches, you have to read all these things early on. It's just to create the framework to, like, to drill in, like, how am I going to drill in? Where do I drill in? And the drilling in part is the important part. That framework's created, I think, really, really quickly, but it allows us to gain, I think, that framework, at least in, like, a top level understanding of whatever we need to understand, to then really go deeper to inform ourselves about whatever it is, how to execute on something.
I'd love for you to think about three people. There's Rich, just graduating from undergrad, Rich, fresh out of law school, and Rich starting New Era ADR. What would be your one piece of advice to each of those three people?
So Rich, graduating from undergrad, who was very excited about going into the world of patent law, it would be, hey, make sure you talk to some patent lawyers, maybe shadow some and talk to some guidance counselors and really understand what a patent lawyer actually does, right? Mm. It is a great career, but you have to understand it so that you understand if it's a fit for you. It took me about a year of doing it before I realized this is awesome, but my passions are in building and in out there selling and talking to people. For law school, I think just reminding me myself what I've said to others now, other lawyers, which is like, just remember that a JD and a legal career doesn't simply mean going to a law firm and going like a traditional path. Law school actually gives you a superpower, which is being able to see around corners, what I said earlier. Take that and apply it in a way where you now understand how businesses work and how different contexts work, right? Not just the legal element of any industry, any organization. Really understand all the pieces and how everything works. And when you understand how an organization works, all the different elements of that organization or all the different elements of that industry, and you understand how all the pieces fit together and what affects what, that's where you can now marry that superpower of being able to see around corners with designing the solutions for the things that could happen. You can't design for a risk if you can't see it coming. To the Rich that was just starting New Era, it's really like a reminder. Remember the users, remember the customers, and build for that and really gain as much of an understanding as you can from them. And frankly, build what's good for them and not what you think is cool. When you deliver a really, really strong user experience, then everything else takes care of itself.
Thank you for joining us for this enlightening conversation with Rich Lee. Rich's journey reminds me that innovation isn't just about creating new solutions. It's about reimagining broken systems. And one of the most powerful places to start is leading with empathy. From transforming legal disputes to advocating for access to justice, his work at New Era ADR showcases the power of merging bold ideas with a human-centered approach. If this episode resonated with you, share it with a friend or colleague who might benefit. And if you're as interested in Rich's mission as I am, do check out neweraadr.com to learn more about their groundbreaking work. And as always, thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. It helps us bring more stories of leaders who are redefining what is possible. As always, I'm your host, Thomas Igeme, and this has been Venture Visionaries. I'll see you next time.